This podcast is presented by Celery.com, the one-stop shop e-commerce logistics provider.
After that, I kind of lost my way and I bounced all over the place. I did a lot of stuff in real estate. I did some private equity investing, and I was kind of really trying to find my own way. And it was after an injury, I was kind of looking for the next thing to do. And that's when Steve Jobs had his fateful keynote on March 6, 2008, which just lit up my world. And I then and there decided I was going to commit myself to these things called apps, not really knowing what even the heck that meant.
Welcome to Celery Talks. This is a show that features ideas and the stories that are behind them. And I'm your host, Tad Kelsey. Celery Talks tells the stories of business ideas and the people that made them happen. On March 6th, 2008, Steve Jobs introduced Apple's App Store to the world. Most people wouldn't become aware of the enormity of this technological development until later. However, it changed Calvin Carter's life immediately. He started his company, Bottle Rocket, the next day. His venture began when he started filling out pads of graph paper with drawings of app concepts. Calvin had no idea the heights he would go with Bottle Rocket. He just knew he was committed no matter what. Calvin, thanks for joining us today. Who is Bottle Rocket?
So Bottle Rocket is in the connected lifestyle and digital experience business. So what that means is we work with large brands all over the world to produce their core digital experience. So that might be an app, a website, an Alexa skill, an AR, VR application. It could be something on Apple Watch, Apple TV, Fire TV, iPhone, Android, you name it. It's some sort of mobile or connected lifestyle platform and experience on it, whether it be mobile ordering from Chick-fil-A to buying a flight and getting your boarding pass for Southwest Airlines, or mixing a custom mix with a Coca-Cola Freestyle machine. That's what we're in the business of.
Now, back before you started the company, where are you from? Where did you grow up?
I'm from Tampa, Florida, where my parents still live today.
What did life in Tampa contribute to who you are today?
I think Tampa's a terrific place where it's small enough to be considered a town, but big enough to have opportunities. And I think probably what Tampa let me do was build a great foundation of love and acceptance with my family. I've got a very tight relationship with my family. And so I think Tampa allowed me to have that strong foundation to spread my wings when it was time.
When you were between 18 and 22, what did you think you'd be doing for a career?
So actually, I had this big plan. My plan was to go to SMU, which I did, and then get a job at a big consultancy, which I did, and work in Dallas a few years, and then move back to Tampa, big fish, small pond, and have a leg up on working in a smaller city, but with kind of bigger city experience. But that's not what happened.
Have you always been entrepreneurial?
So I'm third generation entrepreneur, as far as I know. My great-grandfather was a traveling paint salesman. my mom and dad were both entrepreneurs and worked together in a successful insurance business. So I guess for me, it was always bubbling. And from when I was 9 or 10 years old, I always had these little business ideas and I would make a little extra money here or there with what I called businesses. And even in college, I ran a small business out of my dorm. But the funny thing was, after I graduated, I didn't go straight into starting my own business. I went straight into a job at PricewaterhouseCoopers. But I only lasted there about a little over a year before those entrepreneurial tendencies just consumed me.
What were you doing before starting Bottle Rocket?
So before Bottle Rocket, if you go back to just a handful of years, a dorm friend from SMU and I started a business called Icon Interactive. And Elliot and I built a lot of the first CD-ROM applications for a lot of businesses. And then we were very well positioned to build the very first websites for a lot of companies. So locally, the Dallas Stars and the Texas Rangers, and then otherwise, Cellular One, Armorall, MCI, WorldCom, a lot of those businesses didn't have a website. And so two guys in an apartment got a chance to build, you know, some of the very first websites of big businesses. And after that, I kind of lost my way and I bounced all over the place. After I, you know, exited Icon Interactive through a sale and the larger roll-up business going public, I did a lot of stuff in real estate. I did some private equity investing, and I was kind of really trying to find my own way. And it was after an injury, I was kind of looking for the next thing to do. And that's when Steve Jobs had his fateful keynote on March 6, 2008, which just lit up my world. And I then and there decided I was going to commit myself to these things called apps, not really knowing what even the heck that meant.
Was that the aha moment for you?
The aha moment for me was when already knowing the power of the platform and already being frustrated that it was closed. I was one of the guys that camped out to get the first iPhone, and so I was already predisposed to really liking that platform. And I was already at a point where I had ideas that could be done on the iPhone if one day it would open up. And web apps and the web experience simply didn't cut it for the types of ideas that I had in mind. So while it certainly was not my idea, when Steve opened up the platform, it just opened up my world. And I was like, all that stuff that I wish my iPhone could do, I could now make possible. I don't even have to rely on someone else to make possible. I can do this. And so I really jumped into it. And in no way am I trying to say that I saw the app economy coming. I didn't see a 200-person custom development consultancy, you know, called Bottle Rocket in my future. I just saw promise, and I was personally excited about it, and I just couldn't see myself not doing it. And so I just jumped in, and right off the bat, the only thing I really could do was buy graph paper and pencils and just start sketching app ideas. And when I mean sketch an app idea, I don't mean like draw a little picture and a little description. I mean draw every single flow. So, you know, 50, 100 different screens. I designed either 31 or 33 apps that were fully sketched out. So I did nothing but sketch for a long time.
So you heard Steve Jobs speak. The iPhone had been out about a year, correct?
Call it 9 months.
And you were already a little frustrated that Apple hadn't opened it up more for outside creativity. So in March, Steve Jobs announces this, and you immediately...
Wow. The next morning. So I saw the video that night. It was pretty late at night because they didn't live stream the keynotes like they do now. They usually at least had 5, 6, 7, 10 hours before they'd put it on their website. So I was watching it at probably like 1 a.m. or midnight or something like that. I was keeping entrepreneur hours at the time. And so in that working late and reflecting and trying to think, I decided to watch this keynote, and it was like a lightning strike. So the next morning, 9 a.m., Office Depot opens, and I'm there to buy my graph paper.
Initially, what were the tools at your disposal to create an app?
The graph paper. Just kidding. The iPhone SDK, iOS had not been coined yet. The iPhone SDK was, obviously, you could download that. You had the Apple Human Interface Guidelines, which, thank you, Apple. And you know who you are who wrote those, so thank you so much who did that, because they really did create so many great tools for someone like myself to pick up and run with. You know, over the next few months, iTunes Connect rolled out, which was an interface by which you could upload and manage your apps and kind of see basic download information. There was the finance and contract sections of iTunes Connect, which would allow me to essentially, a guy in my house, working out of my house, I could click a few buttons and I was literally up and running as a business in like 25 plus countries. And over a period of time, it's now significantly more than that. So the ability to charge, collect money, have currency conversion be done, all of it being legit through import-export laws, and to be able to get money into my account by selling apps in the App Store, all of those tools were given to anyone who paid $99 to sign up for the iPhone Developer Program. So a lot of people just think, oh yeah, Apple handed technology tools to people. No, Apple handed technology tools plus all the tools needed to run a business, all in one nice little package. So those are the tools, but then you had to bring your ideas, you had to bring your creativity, your hard work, et cetera, And for me, those tools were literally, this is a real true story, graph paper and pencils. Those were the tools I used to ideate, design, and roll out the first 8 apps by the end of 2008.
Starting in March 2008, what was the competition like in the mobile app development industry in those early days?
So no one knew until that summer, because in March, the tools were announced, but you still couldn't launch an app. That summer was when the App Store went live. And it wasn't until then, until everyone really knew what it was going to be. And so the competition, frankly, it was hard in some areas like games, and it was really weak in other areas like productivity tools. And for a long time, there were entire just categories left open. Like there wasn't a receipt keeper, somebody would gather your receipts like Expensify or something would now. So there were opportunities to be the iPhone receipt keeper. In my case, I went with Voice Memo Taker. So everyone has an iPhone, has an app on their phone that they may not have known existed called Voice Memos. There wasn't one of those, but because you got to remember, iOS 2 was the version that you could build apps from. iOS 1 was the version that came out with the iPhone. So everyone was working with iOS version 2. So it was really interesting because some categories you could just own, and other categories, it was a bloodbath. But very quickly, it became a bloodbath on all fronts, because the time 2009 came around, it was no longer a question of whether or not people were going to use their phones for things other than talking and texting. And it was very quickly that the average number of minutes spent talking and texting was going lower and lower and lower to other uses of the iPhone. And now we know that talking and texting is actually a minority of the time that people use their smartphones for. So it was tough in some areas and actually a cakewalk in others.
When was Bottle Rocket then founded?
Well, it was founded March 7, 2008, the morning after Steve Jobs announced opening the platform. That's literally the day that I founded the business and went out and started, day one.
What was the first app you created?
So there were 8 apps in the first year. Voxy was the first one launched, and Voxy was my voice memos app. But there were other ones like Overnight, which was such an awesome app that nobody downloaded. But it was by far the hardest of all the apps that I produced. Essentially, I scraped all of the Dropbox and drop locations for UPS, USPS, DHL, which was active in North America at the time, and Federal Express. And I got all that information, all the drop-off times, etc. And the app was so cool. You could launch it anytime. It would tell you what locations were closest to you. It would estimate how long it would take for you to get from where you are to each of the locations. I would help them find out, like, based on how long it took them to drive, which locations were still open. And then it would allow you to schedule a pickup, price a package based on dimensions and service. You could actually do price comparison across all 4 carriers, which, by the way, the carriers didn't like. And it would let you track packages with the cute map and like show you where your package is across a map, which I thought was pretty cool. But apparently no one thought that was worth $4.99. So I learned the hard way that you can't just assume that a great idea is going to sell.
Were you making much money in the early days?
Absolutely not. In fact, of the 8 apps, only one of them made enough money that I was able to pay the costs of having built the app and make some money. So there's just one app, an app called Wings, which I call a flight visualizer. For your listeners, I'm now using my hands to explain this, but I'm holding your phone in front of you and tilting it left or right and forward and backwards to essentially fly your imaginary plane over a real-time 3D landscape that you would have picked, whether it be like Spring Meadows or the Ice Mountains, the Arctic Mountains. And it was not a flight simulator because you didn't have to screw around with flaps or landing gear or anything like that. It was just like the fantasy of flight. And it sold like hotcakes. So I was able to make enough money to cover the costs of everything that I had produced so far. And it kept me out of bankruptcy. It kept me out of like just collapsing under the weight of my own small business, because I didn't raise any money. I just started doing this out of my house, trying to minimize cost. And when I had the hit with Wings, it carried me into the next year. It gave me enough to keep going. And I think, unlike a lot of people in the App Store at the time, especially in that first stub year of 2008, because it was, you know, the App Store was really only open for 6 months in 2008. There were a lot of one and dones where a person or a couple of people would come in, they would launch an app, they would make the spike of money, and then it would kind of fall to a long tail. And that's when they would be like, okay, made some money off the App Store, and I'm now going to go back to my day job. That wasn't what I was about. I was about, this is so cool. I love this so much. I'm going to work really hard and never give up because I enjoy this. I love this. And by never giving up, I feel I had an unfair advantage against everybody else because I already decided I wasn't going to give up. I wasn't deciding if was I going to do this or not. I wasn't making a decision. I was making a choice. I choose to do this. And by making that kind of statement, you shed having to think about so many things like, should I do this or should I do this? No, I'm doing this. And so I was able to take all of my mind and focus it on, now what do I do next? An entrepreneur, I think, whether they know it or not, they're using what they have to get what they want. You know, day in, day out, week in, week out, quarter in, quarter out, whatever. These time blocks don't mean much to an entrepreneur. It's just like, I've got this and I can use it to get that. Okay, now I've got that. What can I use to get the next that? So for me, it was really about using the success I have, learning from the failures that I had. I certainly had more of the latter than the former. And then moving on to the next day. And that's really what turned the corner into 2009 when Bottle Rocket did a pretty heavy pivot to building apps for others. In 2008, we weren't doing that.
Who was your first client?
National Public Radio. So NPR has a very important place in my heart. Not only am I a fan of the content, I mean, I listen to NPR every morning and every night on the ride home, but at the time, you know, I was very lucky, you know, with some relationships that I had built to be one of 11 companies that NPR was considering to do its app. And this is back in, I'm going to guess and say like January of 2009 or something like that. So it was very early on in 2009. I had just finished 2008, had just shipped the 8 apps, saw a very quick either success or lack thereof of downloads and revenue based on that, had the pop with Wings. And here shows up an opportunity to build an app for NPR. Now, I had to compete voraciously for that business, but I did win the business to do the NPR app. Later on, after befriending, you know, NPR, and I probably asked him, why did you ever hire me in the first place? I was just some guy in Dallas. You know, you guys are in DC. We never even met. I don't think I met my NPR colleagues until about a year and a half after been working with them. Shows how business has changed. And they said that, number one, I had 8 apps in the store. So app developer just didn't exist, you know, in 2008, 2009. You know, I was one of the first, if not the first, well, I shouldn't say the first, but, you know, one of the first, because I started my business the day after the keynote. So you couldn't, there wasn't an SIC code, so to speak, for app developers. You couldn't look them up online. So here was this company, a little company called Bottle Rocket, that had built a shadow. I'm a big believer in build a shadow. It doesn't matter how big you are. It matters how big the shadow is you cast. So the shadow that we cast was that we had 8 apps in the App Store, all could be downloaded and, you know, played with, and it mattered less how many they sold, and it mattered, did they work or not? Were they well-designed? Were they intuitive? And so NPR could download 8 things in the App Store and use all 8 and decide whether or not my design sense and the design sense people I work with, do they work well? Do they crash? You know, et cetera, et cetera. And remember, I sketched all 31, 33 of those apps. So when I get off the phone call with NPR, my head starts spinning with ideas. So what do? I do the only thing I know what to do, which is to start sketching them. Drive to a Starbucks and start sketching. By the next day, I was able to have sketched the apps, sketched the whole app out, took pictures with my iPhone, and emailed them the photos and got on a follow-up call saying like, hey, I took the liberty of coming up with some ideas. What do you think? Can we talk about them? And that was pretty unique. I think while everybody else was saying, hey, we look forward to hearing from you soon, I had delivered the version one of the sketches of the entire app, and I had some pretty interesting ideas in there, combining episodic content versus long format. You could say, I want a topic, let's say the topic of technology, and the app would present to you a playlist of chunks of lots of different shows about technology. And so you can imagine taking something like radio, you turn it on and you hear whatever is currently broadcasting, taking that and completely flipping it to there's a massive catalog of live and pre-recorded shows, and you can go and get anything you want at any time you want and build your own playlist. That was like just earth-shattering in 2009. What else was really cool was the ability to listen to whatever station you wanted to. So let's say you're overseas in the service and you want to listen to NPR of Oklahoma City because that's where you're from. No problem. Get a little taste of home because we can tune you in live to any NPR station anywhere in the nation. And so ideas like that made possible by NPR already having invested heavily in some really great technology tools. Those guys really had their stuff together. Plus the unique understanding I had of the platform because all I did was design apps for this thing. Those two things together made a great partnership and it produced a great product and also had the tagline designed and developed by Bottle Rocket on it, which really was my only marketing at the time.
So that turned into how you were getting the word out about Bottle Rocket.
Yeah, absolutely. So quickly after that, we were able to have meetings with other great companies like ESPN and Disney and American Express and others that were interested in doing app work as well. And they were also on their journey of trying to find out who do you hire to build these things called apps and what do you need to do to get an app on the App Store. And for them, everything they didn't know, I knew. And for me, I needed opportunities like the big brands that had these just phenomenal opportunities to get on the App Store and do great things for their customers. And so it was a great partnership. They would bring the terrific value proposition that ESPN and Disney and American Express, et cetera, would bring. And then I would simply add to it my knowledge of the platform, and we built great products together.
Did you see this pivot coming? And how did it change Bottle Rocket's vision?
I didn't see the pivot coming. With full transparency, in 2008, I actually thought that I was going to build a business with extremely low footprint, meaning a business I could run out of my home or anywhere, or a small office or whatever it might be. My plan was to hire a small number of people remotely. And that's how I built the first 8 apps. There were a couple of people in Dallas, a great, great person in New York, a couple of great people in California, one really great person in Austin. And just this little ragtag team would work really late at night and get up a little later than everybody else, but probably put in, I don't know, 12, 14, 15 hour days to build these apps. And for me, that was just fine. Like that's what I was going to do. And I didn't have a plan to build a large human centric consultancy. We're not a big business, but in our space, we're considered, you know, large, but we're not a big business. But I had not planned on doing that. So the pivot for me, first off, it went very naturally. I didn't fight it. It was so exciting to work with NPR, and it took me back to my consultancy roots because I really enjoy serving other people and other people's, and I really like adding value to something else to make it better. So I was already had a couple of different areas in my career where I was doing custom work, coming up with ideas, solving problems for others, and then building products around it, mainly using technology. But it wasn't my plan to do that. That was a pretty hard pivot. So if you look just a year or two further from that date, we were doing almost primarily apps for others than we were for our own account. In fact, we only continued to develop a handful of games for our own account. And even those games, we partnered with others to use, like Annoying Orange. We would essentially have a license deal where we could license the Annoying Orange likeness, which was a massive YouTube hit, and build games around it. Things like that. Or Fred Figglehorn and others that we built apps in partnership with. But other than the games, we did everything for others, not for our own account.
at what point did you say, all right, I need to hire more full-time talent?
The time I had, you know, a handful, let's call them 10 people, but it was all contract, you know, and then, and so it wasn't probably until, I'm going to guess, like late 2009, it may have been even early 2010, when I had kind of a reunion with a friend and former colleague, Matt Johnson, and he was building some games, some, you know, iPhone games. And we got together at Starbucks, and he was kind of laying out some game ideas that he had. He was in a transitionary period, and he was trying to figure out what he was going to be doing. And he said, hey, I've heard really some great things about what you're doing with Bottle Rocket, Calvin, and, you know, these apps like NPR that you got it out in the marketplace, and maybe some of the other stuff that we had on our own account. And it just felt very natural for us to start working together. So Matt was officially Rocketeer number two, if you consider me number one. He was officially number two. And then it was time for, well, if Matt and I are going to get together, we can't just meet at Starbucks all the time. We did for quite a while. But that meant me bumming a favor from another entrepreneur friend to rent a couple cubes that he wasn't using at his office. And the next thing you know, we've got 5 of his cubes, and then 12 of his cubes, and then 20 of his cubes, and then there wasn't enough room for his employees to sit. And so we moved to another sublease from another friend. Next thing you know, we've got 50 people in that sublease area. And now he can't expand into his own office because I'm encroaching on his office. And so then we go to the next place and the next place. So it just kind of happens. If it feels like the right thing to do to take you forward to the next place you want to be, then you do it. And I tried to not let my own personal fears or my own personal concepts of what could be, what's possible versus impossible. I try not to let myself stand in the way of the business, because at all times, an entrepreneur is in some way holding his or her own company back. It just is what it is. And the entrepreneur that says that's not true just doesn't see it. And that's okay, as long as they surround themselves with people that are courageous enough to help the entrepreneur understand what's in his or her blind spot. We all have one. And if an entrepreneur is enlightened enough, self-aware enough that a blind spot exists, and surrounds himself or herself with people that they trust, then an entrepreneur can really get great feedback as to how they're holding the company back. And so hopefully, while certainly not perfect, hopefully I've been all this time listening to the people that I've attracted to the same mission and vision that I have, helping me understand where I need to step away and allow someone else to let it grow. And so, for example, it would be a really bad idea for the founder to be the number one salesperson. I know there's different opinions about that, but I'm firmly on the side of the founder cannot be the number one salesperson, because one person can only sell so much. And selling is about opportunity. It's about creating opportunity, and opportunity for others in their lives. And so very early on, the Rocketeer number five was just a super great guy who could really take the charge on selling. There were others along the way that really could get their hands around quality assurance, around engineering, around experience design, around project management. And for me, it was almost a full-time job of letting go. If I didn't do a good job of letting go, and a lot of people accuse me of not letting go, so I want to admit that I don't do it perfectly, but it was a full-time job for me letting go things to people that I trusted and people that I felt carried the flag as high as I would.
Early on, Bottle Rocket created some exciting apps and started growing fast. The potential seemed almost limitless with the number of clients seeking app development. The company had growing pains yet to be felt, and Calvin had lessons he would still learn. Come back in episode 8 to hear more about Bottle Rocket's journey and the wisdom Calvin gained after 10 years as CEO of Bottle Rocket. Subscribe and leave a review on iTunes, and you can also listen on Stitcher as well as at podomatic.com. Thank you.